Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As Nancy Pelosi departed the U.S. to begin her tour of Asia, the Chinese government reiterated their threat of, quote, countermeasures and consequences should the House Speaker visit Taiwan. Pelosi is in Singapore today and is set to visit Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan, with new reports suggesting she will stop by Taiwan tomorrow. So, how will Communist China respond to this? We'll discuss in tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Will Pelosi go to Taiwan? Big question of the day. She is the Speaker of the House. Now, she's a deeply venal, ignorant, and unethical person, but she is still the Speaker of the House, a representative of the United States government, and therefore, whether or not she goes to Taiwan reflects on U.S. foreign policy and therefore on the people of our country. Now, we've been put in quite a situation here because if Pelosi does go, well, China could take extreme measures. Chinese Foreign Ministry, a representative, warned today that if Pelosi enters Taiwan, quote, Beijing's military will not sit idly by if Pelosi enters Taiwan. Due to her status as a number three official of the U.S. government, a Taiwan visit would lead to egregious political impact. Okay, political impact would be something that we could certainly handle and is not enough, I would think, to deter a Pelosi visit, because the other option here of her not going would be for the number three in line for the U.S. presidency government official to allow the Communist Party of China to make a determination about where, outside of Chinese territory, a U.S. official can go. Now, that's a big problem. And this is why the U.S. is not standing idly by either. A U.S. aircraft carrier and its strike group, including the USS Ronald Reagan, have returned to the South China Sea after a port call in Singapore, deploying in the disputed region as tensions with China rise over a possible visit to Taiwan by Congressional Leader Nancy Pelosi. So Let's just take stock of this moment in time, shall we? We have a Speaker of the House now has a catch-22. If she doesn't go, it looks like she's bending the knee to China. If she does go, she's provoking some kind of Chinese response. How severe would it be? Obviously, any military act against the plane or against the convoy that Nancy Pelosi would be in is an act of war, as clear an act of war as one that could exist. And so what would the U.S. response be? Obviously, it would be military, and it could provoke a broader conflict between the two largest economies and the two most powerful countries in the world. So those are the stakes right now. But it's also worth asking, what exactly is U.S. foreign policy with regard to Taiwan? Has anyone really decided what is the U.S. position? Because today, for example, the Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said, you can hear it yourself right here, the U.S. does not support an independent Taiwan. Watch.
The speaker can speak for herself, and whatever she wants to say on this trip is really her prerogative. That's why it was so important for me in my opening comments, Kelly, to make clear what this administration's policy is with respect to the One China principle, One China policy, as well as not wanting to see cross-strait tensions resolved by any other than peaceful means, and the fact that we don't support Taiwan independence. It was important for me to lay that down right at the outset. That's our policy. That's this administration's approach. I can't speak for what Speaker Pelosi may do or
does it sound like he has a clear policy to articulate there for everybody? A lot of kind of mumbling and going back and forth. Well, you know, we support a one China policy, but we don't support Taiwan independence. Well, hold on a second. Taiwan's independent right now. Taiwan has a democratically elected government. We do a lot of business with Taiwan. They're incredibly important when it comes to semiconductors for the global market, including for the U.S. We sell them a lot of arms and munitions so they can defend themselves against China. The only reason they have to buy the kind of weaponry they do. So it is a de facto independent state. But we tell the Chinese we agree with their one China policy, according to Kirby there. And we don't support an independent Taiwan, even though right now it is independent. But what exactly is going on here? And now we also should be forced to just stare down this notion of strategic ambiguity. Strategic ambiguity is bullcrap, friends, okay? This is nonsense. This goes along with the Obama administration's leading from behind or strategic patience with regard to happenings in the Pacific, including with China and North Korea. Those are fancy ways of saying we don't really know what we're going to do, and we're probably not going to do anything, and we're not even sure what we want. Now, in foreign policy, those are all very bad places to be. You got to know what you want. You got to know what your ultimate goal is, how you hope to get there, what costs you're willing to bear along the way. That's how it's supposed to work. But yet, we have a situation right now where if you believe some of those who are the most concerned about this, we could be risking an act of war and even full-scale war itself with China over this visit to Taiwan. Now, that may seem a bit extreme, but some people certainly think that's possible. The Chinese government is saying it's possible. So what does that mean for us? Would the U.S. military intervene in a Chinese attempt to take Taiwan? I mean, that's really what is behind all of this, right? Is the U.S. going to back Taiwan up when China decides that they're going to seize the island? Because they have been saying for decades that that's what they will do. And they seem to be moving in that direction. Does the United States government plan to defend Taiwan militarily? They won't answer the question. Think about that. I mean, there are so many places around the world where the answer would be, well, we hope that this country A doesn't involve country B, but we're not about to go to war if they do. Strategic ambiguity is, well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. We'll see how we feel at the time. That's quite a policy. The basis of foreign policy is, or the baseline understanding is, who are your friends, who are your enemies? Do they know the difference? And does it matter that there's a difference? Do we really know what we're doing right now with regard to China and Taiwan? Is U.S. policy clear? I'd bring you back to that Kirby statement. We don't want an independent Taiwan. We want a one China. We support the one China policy. So then Pelosi shouldn't go because China says we shouldn't do that? The White House apparently, by the way, is working behind the scenes to convince Pelosi not to visit. Behind the scenes, the Biden administration officials have been working to spell out, these from CNN, the potential risks of a visit and meetings with Pelosi and her team. Pentagon officials briefed the speaker last week about Taiwan and the heightened tensions in the region. White House officials were also present for the briefing. The president let slip last week that the U.S. military was opposed to Pelosi visiting Taiwan now, but the White House has refused to expand on his comments. Look, ultimately, this comes down to what are we willing to do in the defense of that island? Because if we're not willing to defend it, it won't be able to defend itself from a Chinese invasion. And what would we be willing to do if we did decide to defend it? Does that mean full-scale war? Does it mean some kind of attempt at a limited military incursion against an invasion force? I don't think there's going to be an act of war from China over a Pelosi visit that may or may not happen, but it does raise the specter of a future U.S. confrontation with China over Taiwan. And we should, as a country, as a people, understand that now and know what the stakes are and what we would do. Strategic ambiguity is nonsense. People who say, oh, we have this policy of strategic ambiguity, that's essentially, we have not publicly decided what we would do. And the truth is because we don't know what we would do. And all the foreign policy experts that are going to say, oh, but we know and we would. And depends on the administration. Depends on the time. Depends on how we feel, right? Time for a much more honest conversation about Taiwan, China, and the United States. We'll have more on Pelosi's possible trip to Taiwan with senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Dean Chang, coming up. First, I'm going to talk to the owners of timeshares, especially those who are upset about their yearly dues having nearly doubled. In most cases, your timeshares will be passed from your generation to the next with fees included. It's crazy that the annual fees never stop, even after you quit using your property. Well, I do have a solution for you. Get some peace of mind from my friends at Lone Star Transfer. This family-owned business has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and has over 16,000 satisfied customers. Lone Star has over 15 years of experience in the timeshare disposal business and a 99% success rate. Say goodbye to those fees. With customer service like Lone Star's, they treat you as if you're a member of their family. They will personally make your experience a pleasant one. Lone Star Transfer guarantees the release of all liability to your timeshare in writing and in a specific time frame. Give Lone Star Transfer a call for a free, no-obligation consultation. 844-284-4739. That's 844-284-4739 or online at LoneStarTransfer.com. We'll be right back. In response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's expected visit to Taiwan, China continued some pretty aggressive military exercises off its coast over the weekend, including live fire drills. In a phone call last week, President Xi Jinping warned Biden against external interference in Beijing's dealings with the island, as China believes Taiwan has no right to conduct foreign relations. So what will happen if Pelosi does in fact touch down in Taiwan? Let's ask senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Dean Chang, about this. Dean, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this. Should Pelosi go at this point in your mind, and explain to us what your thinking is, why you think so?
At this point, I don't think we have a choice. I think Speaker Pelosi has to go, in no small part because the Chinese are now insisting that she does not have a right to go. And if we give in to this, if we accede to the Chinese claim, we are essentially giving Beijing veto power over which American officials can, and presumably which American officials cannot, then go to Taiwan. Taiwan may or may not be independent. At this point, it is not an independent country. It is not recognized, for example, by the United States. But it is also not part of China. It is not for China to dictate whether the Speaker of the American House can go.
Now, what do you think are the realistic range of responses from China? Assuming Pelosi does touch down in Taiwan in the next 24 hours, what do you think are the real possibilities here that we should be looking for in terms of response?
I think the things that absolutely will happen: China will protest. China will make speeches condemning this action, which in their view jeopardizes peace and stability in the Western Pacific. They will likely cross the midline of the Taiwan Straits with aircraft. They may send ships now that they're conducting live fire exercises across the midline, notably not within 12 nautical miles of Taiwan proper, That would be very fun. But, you know, sort of just crossing the line. They'll probably circumnavigate the island. They will probably do more cyber attacks. They will probably put economic pressure on the island. You hear a bunch of things like, for example, they might shoot down Speaker Pelosi's plane. Frankly, I think that is irresponsible, not even speculation. It's fantasy of people who are hoping that China will do something incredibly stupid. But if you take a look in the post-Mao Zedong era, including under Deng Xiaoping, the Chinese have done nothing similar to, say, the Russians, who have actively poisoned dissidents in Britain.
Right. And so Pelosi going is the right thing. You think there'll be some noise from China about this, but not a whole lot more than the measures that you laid out, right? I mean, crossing the putting planes closer, but not open hostilities of any kind. You don't foresee that happening. The
not
U.S. policy with regard to Taiwan. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dean, if you wanted to add more.
Yeah, I think if you are a company headquartered in Speaker Pelosi's district, you're likely to get Chinese pressure. If you are a company that relies on parts from China in Speaker Pelosi's district, you're going to get pressure. But overt hostilities, actual use of military force, no, I don't think so.
So now the Biden White House has been back and forth on this issue of Taiwan, in part just cleaning up for Joe Biden, which is a whole separate issue from what the actual policy may be because he's Joe Biden, right? So we've all seen that. But putting that aside for a moment, defense press secretary today, he said that the Biden administration does not support an independent Taiwan. We have strategic ambiguity as the phrase that everybody uses about this. What really is U.S. policy with regard to Taiwan right now? I mean, we're going to send Speaker Pelosi probably. It operates as an independent country, but it's not technically an independent country. Would we defend it? Would we not defend it? It feels like that people act like there are clear answers to all this, but there really aren't clear answers.
So the situation with Taiwan is the following. The United States does not want either side to unilaterally change the situation in the Taiwan Straits. That means we don't want China invading Taiwan, but we also don't want Taiwan declaring independence. And in the past, when Taiwanese leaders have gone down that path, they have taken very irresponsible measures. A former leader of Taiwan went so far as to say, you know, America has to defend us. They have no choice. So if we declare independence and China attacks, America will have to come to our rescue. That would be like Poland saying, if we invade Russia, you know, we're a member of NATO, so NATO has to come and save us.
Right.
That's clearly not the case. That's clearly not something anyone signed up for. So that's why we have strategic ambiguity. We are saying to Taiwan, look, don't declare independence. Don't throw that in the Chinese face. And we're saying to Beijing, if you launch an invasion, there's a very good chance that you're going to find the Seventh Fleet in your face up close and personal. So that is why we have this policy of strategic ambiguity, because it's a three-way situation, and we are trying to keep the lid on both Taipei and Beijing.
So where does that lead us, though? I mean, what is the pathway then? It's status quo until someone decides to change it, right? So is there a future you could see in which China would just decide to go for it, right? I mean, look, Putin did go for it in Ukraine.
Around 2027 is when the People's Liberation Army says, we are going to be fully ready. We are going to be fully modernized. We'll be what they term fully mechanized, fully informationized, and fully intelligenceized. That is the period when we are at the greatest danger. When the PLA says, whatever you want us to do, we are ready to do. And it's also going to be a time when a whole lot of the U.S. military is going to be underfunded, when modernization programs are only going to be starting, when a whole lot of systems are going to be obsolete. We are retiring ships faster than we are building them. And in 2027, we're going to probably have a smaller Navy than we do now. So that is going to be the period of truly greatest danger. At the moment, we're still on a pretty good situation in terms of our military. And the PLA, if you ask them, will say, we are not fully modernized yet.
Are they really committed, though? I mean, yeah. Is the Chinese Communist Party committed to taking Taiwan by force when they think they are capable of doing it?
At this point in time, I would say yes. They would prefer to take it peacefully, but I think that Xi Jinping really does believe that he and the CCP have a destiny that by 2049, the 100th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China, it will be a full People's Republic of China. Hong Kong, Taiwan, all of these regions will be part of China. I think that is truly their game plan.
Dean, appreciate the expertise. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
As the nation waits to learn whether or not Donald Trump will seek another term in the Oval Office, one of his top advisors is explaining just how Trump can take back the White House in 2024. When we come back, former Director of Trade and Manufacturing Policy Peter Navarro joins us to give his insight into a potential Trump run. But first, let's talk about my friends at My Patriot Supply. You might not realize this, but punishing food shortages are likely coming. In Europe, farmers are protesting high fertilizer and fuel costs. They're going to cut production, and American farmers will likely do the same. When farmers cut production, you get food shortages. And if you don't personally have emergency backup food to get through those shortages, you could even be forced to stand in line at the store and government food lines to feed your family. You want to avoid that? You need to go with preparewithbuck.com. You'll find a special offer where you'll save $150 on a 3-month supply of emergency food from My Patriot Supply. Each kit has enough food for 3 solid months per person, providing over 2,000 calories a day to keep your energy up. These kits last up to 25 years in store. Get to preparewithbuck.com right now and save $150 on each 3-month kit you require. These kits ship free as well. So get ready today. Go to preparewithbuck.com. That's preparewithbuck.com. Peter Navarro up next. Stay with us. Now the questions that are on everybody's minds these days, will Donald Trump run for a second term as president? And if so, can he defeat his Democratic opponent? One of the former president's top advisors, Peter Navarro, thinks he has the answers. In his forthcoming book entitled Taking Back Trump's America, Why We Lost the White House and How We'll Win It Back, Peter examines what went wrong in Trump's first term and how he can ultimately take back the White House in 2024. Joining me now to discuss, former Director of Trade and Manufacturing Policy for President Trump, Peter Navarro. Peter, good to see you.
Truly great to be with you again, sir. And yes, he's going to run. In the Taking Back Trump's America book really is a blueprint and battle cry for the whole MAGA movement, not just to take back the White House for Trump in 2024, but importantly to also grab that House of Representatives from the clutches of the Nancy Pelosi. Back in 2018, one of the mistakes we made that I document in the Taking Back Trump's America book was to focus too narrowly on the Senate races in the midterm elections. We could have held on to the House of Representatives in 2018, but there was a couple of people inside the White House who screwed that up, to be honest. And the hell we would pay for that single mistake would be massive, because once you put the House in charge of Pelosi and Schiff and little Jamie Raskin, they unleashed several discredited impeachment trials and all manner of weaponized investigations for partisan ends, which the president obviously didn't get successfully impeached. But I think the drip, drip, drip of the water torture from those bastards, and I call them that with all due affection, took its toll. So we've got to get the House back in 2022. I'm really focused on that now. I do it with Trump Republicans, not just Republicans. There's no question in my mind that the boss runs. He hasn't told me that, he'd win if he'd run, and he knows what to do, and this nation needs him, because God knows the Democrats are doing every single thing wrong.
Peter, I know in the book you lay out what you think would be a dream Trump cabinet for term two. You've got, for example, former Trump National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien becomes Secretary of State. Ben Carson runs HHS. Lighthizer goes over to Commerce. Kash Patel, friend of mine, friend of the show, becomes DNI. John Ratcliffe becomes CIA Director. Ken Cuccinelli returns as head of Homeland Security. So some very good folks in there. I got to ask, do you think that the former President Trump now recognizes that there were some pretty big mistakes made in the first term in terms of personnel, especially given that there are people that have now made careers who were senior officials trashing the man they went to work for?
Yeah, the quick answer is yes. The more textured answer, if you go back to the Reagan years, Buck, there was this thing, personnel is policy. And Reagan wanted to make sure that he got the right people in there so he'd have his Reagan-esque policies. In the Taking Back Trump's America book, I refine that bad personnel is not just bad policy, but bad politics. And if you go back and look at all the mistakes that were made, the president is well aware that there were a lot of people in there that shouldn't have been and did him damage. I mean, look, just all the people he had to fire, whether it was Rex Tillerson at State, Jim Mattis at the Defense Department. But the two people that I really feel ultimately did the most damage to the boss were two people who stayed on and should never darken the boss's door again. And that would have been Steve Mnuchin at the Treasury Department, who completely undermined our China, tough on China policy at the same time that he bobbled the ball up on Capitol Hill. And then Jared Kushner, who really the damage when you get through reading Taking Back Trump's America and catalog all of the damage Kushner did, you'll see that he never belonged there to begin with. And the boss, Kushner has taken himself out of the equation with his behavior after the first term here, selling out to all the interests that he was catering to when he was inside. But bad personnel, bad policy, bad politics, we can't make that mistake again. I think President Trump is well aware that he needs to really get a stronger list. That's why I put up the Dream Cabinet. And Buck, by the way, I recommended, I went through all the possible vice president candidates. And I think the optimal situation is to see if DeSantis will agree to be his VP and just clear the field. I think if they did that, and that's in DeSantis' interest because he'd be in the White House for 12 years because he'd successfully run after that. But below DeSantis, it's a pretty thin bench in terms of possible VP candidates.
Your book goes into the five, what you call the five strategic failures of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
See, I find this really interesting because one thing, this Taking Back Trump's America, you know, I was a big Trump supporter. Obviously, you were a major part of the administration. You're a Trump supporter to this day. I was always frustrated that there was very little room for trying to coach the administration, right? Rooting for the team, so to speak, but coach it in the right direction. People said, oh, Trump knows what he's doing with the MAGA agenda and just be quiet and everything else. There were some places where, with any administration, things could have been better. You talk about five strategic failures. You want a successful second Trump term. So what are the lessons learned? What are the things that need to be applied for the next time around?
Well, there's 400 pages of that in the Taking Back Trump's America book. But I think that, pure MAGA is three things. It's secure borders, certainly, and end the endless wars. But the really important thing, and really the key politically to the battleground states, is the fair trade. I mean, Republicans are a dime a dozen who support cutting taxes and deregulation. And even one of the things that was the hallmark of Trump's administration, where we got strategic energy dominance and energy import independence. I mean, we didn't have to do that. But really, the future of this country really depends on onshoring our manufacturing. And that's what we got to focus on. That's what the boss really wanted to do. But too many times, there were just too many people inside, Mnuchin, Kudlow, Gary Cohn before him at the National Economic Council, Tillerson at State. And I document in the Taking Back Trump's America book all the times I had to fight these guys. I mean, it was like we'd go into the Roosevelt room, we'd be sitting around with the whole cabinet and the White House senior officials, and that Trump and I would be the only people in the room who wanted tariffs on steel and aluminum in China. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is going on here? It's like, that's not what we can, you know, it's like we campaigned on tariffs. We got elected on tariffs. We got elected on tough on China. Why are all these people in this room here and against that? So, yeah, I mean, look, the past is prologue. You've heard that. It can't be in the second term. You know, it's Taking Back Trump's America is not only about how to win the White House back, but it's how to govern even more effectively. I mean, End of the day, Trump was the most effective president in modern history on the economy and on national security. We had peace, we had prosperity, but we still left a lot of stuff on the table.
All right, I'll get my copy today. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me on. I do appreciate that.
In a stunning about face, the Disney-backed streaming service Hulu will now allow Democratic campaign ads on the issues of abortion and gun control to air on the service. We'll have more on that with columnist for the Washington Examiner, Beckett Adams, after the break. But first, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed, but we know that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger and only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com and use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. In a stunning about face, streaming service Hulu will now allow Democratic campaign ads on issues of abortion, gun control, and the January 6th Capitol riot after initially refusing to run them. The reversal comes after a number of Democratic groups accused Hulu of political censorship. In a statement to the Washington Post, the group said, quote, voters have the right to know the facts about MAGA Republicans' agenda on issues like abortion. And Hulu is doing a huge disservice to the American people by blocking voters from learning the truth about the GOP record or denying these issues from even being discussed. Hulu's decision to cave to the pressure violates its longstanding policy against airing ads featuring, quote, content that takes a position on controversial issues of public importance. So why the change of heart? Let's talk to the program director at the National Journalism Center and columnist, the Washington Examiner, and buddy from my Blaze days, Mr. Beckett Adams. Beckett, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Didn't last very long. I mean, I think it was a week ago we did a story here about how, oh, Hulu says they're not going to take these ads. Whoops, now they are. What changed here? What really changed?
You already used the word, it was pressure. Democrats play their hand really well on this. They went and complained to the right people, being the press, whether it was leaking letters to, you know, sort of the left-wing blogs like Jezebel, and then going directly with original, juicy, exclusive statements to the Washington Post. And they pushed, and then to their benefit, the press handed this like it was something unprecedented and shocking. When, as you already mentioned, Hulu has a longstanding policy against these sort of ads, but all you need to do is get a little bit of pressure from the right places in media. Next thing you know, you got yourself a PR crisis, and the easiest way out is to just cave.
I got to ask you this, because, you know, I'm a former Hulu subscriber, and I bailed after I just felt like every time I clicked on any new offering from Hulu, you know, I was getting a lecture on either trans issues or race relations or something else. I'm like, wait, I thought this was like a quiz show, or I thought I was watching a cooking show, and all of a sudden it didn't matter what it was. It just made it about wokeness, and it just a lot of the content was just garbage too. So I just want to know. I mean, do you think that does Hulu even care what its subscribers want when it comes to this decision, or is this just the peer group pressure that the C-suite folks decided? Well, We don't want to be treated poorly, as you said, in Jezebel or, you know, the Daily Beast or any of these left wing rags.
Well, right. The easiest way out of this is to just do it. What's interesting that should be noted is on other Disney affiliated networks, including there was an ABC News affiliate in Philadelphia and ESPN. They ran some of these ads. So Democrats were getting what they wanted. They just wanted a carve out for themselves, a special exemption from Hulu, and they got it just by complaining to the Washington Post and the press. This is important, working hand in hand to talk about how this was tantamount to political censorship, despite the fact that even as the Washington Post notes, this is a longstanding policy. They just wanted to carve out, and now they got it.
Speaking of censorship, I'm sure you saw that on the issue of recession, there have been efforts to shut down the Wikipedia page from new edits on the word recession. Elon Musk even tweeted out about this over the weekend. This all feels very Soviet. It all feels like we're now at the point in our politics where the power centers will decide that words don't mean what they mean. And the media, which are supposed to be, Beckett, the guardians of free speech, which is laughable when you say that out loud, they go along with this. They're like, yeah, let's just redefine recession.
Yeah, this is the issue you get into where people start poking fun at you and saying slippery slope. Oh, you know. But this is where it starts. And not to be cliche or trite, but, you know, George Orwell wrote about this in The Politics in the English Language. If you want to win, you got to capture the language. And we're seeing this in real time, watching the White House and its allies in the press in real time redefining the term recession. For literally decades, we've all agreed on one term, and now people are saying, actually, it's not two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. That never mattered. Paul Krugman said verbatim, ignore the two-quarter rule. And he never said or answered the question, why? Why should we suddenly do this? Because words now are fluid. Words mean what we need them to be. We see Merriam-Webster on the fly during, you know, The confirmation hearings of Amy Comey Barrett was on the fly redefining certain terms like sexual orientation. It's a scary place to get to. And again, I don't want to sound like the slippery slope. I'm paranoid. But this is how it starts. When you start playing with the words and you start redefining them on the fly for political purposes, that's when the next thing you know, the word hyperinflation doesn't mean anything anymore. And the next thing you know, the word war doesn't mean anything anymore.
Just also in the media realm, I wanted to ask for your take on this. You know, there's some reporting that whether it's the New York Times or CNN, there's a recognition that Republican lawmakers won't even go on certain, they won't sit for interviews with certain journalists who are at places like the New York Times. They won't go on CNN. By the way, I think that Republicans who do go on CNN are generally just opening themselves up to ambush. I think it's a stupid move a lot of the time, or has been certainly in the Trump era and its aftermath, a stupid move for Republicans to go on CNN because they're not getting a fair shake, not even close to it. Now the head of CNN, Chris Licht, is reportedly meeting with Republican members of Congress to tell them, and he went down to Capitol Hill for this, to tell them, we really would appreciate if you would come on our air. I promise from the very top, you're not going to just have tomatoes thrown at you. Because that is what, I used to work at CNN, I know this, that is what they were doing there for years.
Right. I mean, there's a difference between going into the lion's den and then cutting out your heart and offering it up on a platter. I think it's great if Republicans want to meet and do interviews with tough journalists who ask tough questions. But there's a difference between doing that and then having John Hayward or having Candy Crowley moderate your debates. I think it's a long time for the GOP to actually take a line on some of this stuff and say, this isn't worth our time. This is a setup. Why would I go on Jon Stewart to have you, you know, edit what I'm saying? Not to say Jon Stewart's a media guy, but increasingly there's a little difference between what media guys do and what Jon Stewart does. And why would you do that? So I think it's a natural reaction to being given a raw deal. And it's funny now to hear the press kind of say this sort of concern trolling that, oh, if you don't talk to us, it might hurt your electoral chances. It's like a friend of mine made a really good analogy, and says, like, what's her name from Charlie Brown? Lucy Van Pelt. Sorry, a little like that. Lucy Van Pelt complaining that if Charlie Brown doesn't kick the football, he is now endangering the game of football. I mean, at some point, you kind of wise up to the tricks, and I think it's a natural progression at this point.
Becky, thanks for being with us. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
President Biden is back in isolation after testing positive once again for COVID-19. We'll have that story for you in quick hits. First, let's talk about a potential opportunity. A lot of you are worried about the reported food shortages and power outages that could be headed our way. You're not alone. If you look at the skyrocketing cost of energy and food prices going through the roof, we're certainly headed in the wrong direction. Many are choosing to go off-grid in response. When you think of going off-grid, you might think of living in the mountains somewhere far, far from civilization. But there's actually a safe option for going totally off-grid in Panama, Central America, and a modern home starts at only $100,000. These homes are fully set up on a self-sustaining farm with all of your needs met right on property. Panama offers a stable government, cost-effective, high-quality medical care, and a fantastic climate. There are only 24 homes being offered to the community, so reach out to them quickly at offgridpanama.com or call them at 904-236-4737. Once again, that's offgridpanama.com or call 904-236-4737. Quick hits coming up next. Stay with us. President Biden tests positive for COVID once again, and Dr. Fauci is wondering why you won't just adhere to the public health measures. We have those stories on tonight's Quick Hits. Let's get right into it, shall we? Okay, so Biden has received two initial shots of the vaccine. I don't know if it was Pfizer or Moderna, probably Pfizer, I would guess, but whatever. And so he got two shots because one wasn't enough. Okay, fine, it's a two-dose vaccine, they said. Then he got a booster because the vaccine wears off pretty quickly, even after the second dose. Then he got another booster. Then he got COVID. Then he took Paxlovid. Then he got COVID again, or at least tested positive for COVID a second time from the same infection. Here you go. Biden tests positive for coronavirus again in what is called a rebound case. Now, worth noting for a moment that Dr. Anthony Fauci, the vile tyrant of the COVID pandemic, also had a rebound Paxlovid situation where he tested positive for COVID after initially testing positive then negative while taking Paxlovid, a Pfizer pill that is an antiviral drug that has shown some good efficacy. But there is this notion of the rebound case that you get when you take Paxlovid. So it's an interesting situation, isn't it? But more interesting than that even is, why would anyone be fired from their job for not getting this vaccine? Think of all the mandates that were set up. Oh, you can't come into the restaurant. You can't come into this place unless we see your vaccine passport. That was appalling stupidity. It was madness all along. The people that pushed that should be ashamed of themselves. But they're not. They're not. In fact, they're still going, which is what's truly amazing. Fauci, who is the most destructive public health bureaucrat in history, and really, I think, arguably the worst person in America today in terms of overall damage to his fellow human beings, it's really hard to come up with somebody who is more destructive and more dishonest and has this level of influence still in public discourse that Dr. Anthony Fauci does. Here he is, for example, complaining that Americans are not adhering to what he calls common sense health measures. Watch.
Unfortunately, given the fatigue that we have in this country from 2.5 years of this, everyone is tired of it. So it's very difficult, superimposed upon an anti-vax type feeling among some, superimposed upon the political divisiveness we have in this country, which, you know, and the social media misinformation and disinformation, it's very difficult to get people to adhere to common sense public health measures.
I mean, he still thinks that if only you would mask up more, the virus would stop. It's tough to know if he's just a lunatic or a liar or both, but there's something clearly wrong with that. I mean, there's obviously a problem with Fauci. There's a disconnect here that he cannot observe what is so obvious all around us. Libs of TikTok is a great social media account because it shows you a lot of libs saying things, and it exposes millions of people to what leftists actually believe. Some leftists, but it is increasingly clear that they're not fringe beliefs. They're, in fact, growing beliefs on the left. And here is a lib TikToker who says she doesn't want anyone who voted for Trump ringing up her groceries, fixing her car, or providing her any other services. Watch.
I don't know if I'm being a bit extreme with this, but prior to 2016, I go in the supermarket and there's a person next to me. The clerk who checked me out, go to the doctor's office, talk to the receptionist, the doctor, go to the dentist, get my car fixed. I had no issue. Now, 2022, I'm looking at the receptionist at the doctor's office and wondering if she's a Trump supporter. I'm wondering if my mechanic voted for Trump. I don't want you fixing my motherfucking car, right? At the supermarket, the cashier who's ringing me through, did you vote for Trump? Because I don't want you ringing my shit up. My dentist, don't be drilling me, bitch, if you voted for Trump. Is anybody else like me?
Unfortunately, a lot of psycho libs are just like her. It's become part of the culture now. They can't separate their politics from anything in their lives. It's appalling, but the Democrat Party's done to people. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.